Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Dev Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! This show is brought to you by Avalara, who want to help developers make sure their Woo projects are tax compliant and done right with Avalara's API.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to another Woo Dev Chat episode. My name is Marcel, and today with me joining, as always, is Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Marcel. How you doing?
All good. Great. We have a wonderful topic for today. Before diving into the topic, and because we're new hosts here, maybe we should introduce ourselves one more time, I guess. I can start, so you can think a little bit about what you're going to say about yourself. So my name is Marcel. I'm the owner of Plugins Lab. It's a small agency specialized in developing enterprise solutions for WooCommerce. We built a bunch of products for clients along the last years, and we also are active in creating mobile apps. My experience with WordPress is over 12 years now, and with WooCommerce 8 or 9. I keep saying these numbers, and I realize I don't update these numbers throughout the years, but it's something like that. I'm also doing some work lately regarding performance optimization, and also I do work a lot with enterprise level clients. I'm currently active as a freelancer and codable, and when I'm not coding, I enjoy playing music and doing photography. How about yourself, Mike?
Well, yeah, I'm Mike. I run a small, mainly performance-based agency for WordPress and WooCommerce. We help a lot of clients in crisis when their sites are crashing and slow and they don't understand why. And we go in and find out why and give them recommendations and create custom solutions for them to get things back up and running and working as fast as possible within reason, while also keeping their business objectives aligned. And I also freelance through Codable. And I've been doing this. I also realize I don't update my numbers either, Marcel. I've been performance and technology since I was a young teenager, and I was the IT guy for my dad's business and stuff. So the whole, tech mindset and this and that has been active for a very long time now.
Yeah, whenever we say the numbers, we actually don't. We need to always to go back in memory and say, was it 2012, 14, 13 with WooCommerce? But we all, because we're so, I was going to say old. I'm not going to say old. Because we're so mature in our profession, we need to go back way earlier, right? Because our time didn't start with WordPress. Or in that case, I've been doing web development since 1998, and I've also been active with IT stuff and networking for schools and other things like that. But anyways, that's not today's episode. It could be actually one episode that we could talk about how old we are and what technologies existed 30 years ago. But anyways, that's not the topic for today. We would like to talk actually about performance. And the performance part we would like to talk today about is related, obviously, to WooCommerce and why it is so important to keep your website up to speed. Because, Mike, your area of expertise is performance, and I am sort of like not taking my first steps in performance, because performance generally in WordPress is something that we should all know about as developers. But especially WooCommerce related and things that are specific to WooCommerce. I think today I would like to dive a little bit into that specific topic and talk about WooCommerce and performance and the advices we can give to people running WooCommerce stores, and also maybe advices to developers who are asked to do performance optimizations to the client's websites. And as we know, WooCommerce is very popular. Everyone who wants to start an e-commerce store has obviously heard about WooCommerce and will eventually try to install WooCommerce and just play with it around. And so sometimes people get excited. They see how easy it is to set up the website and they launch the business and then they grow and then they have some audience and then they have products. And then the site starts to slowing down. And people usually do think, oh, I heard it is because of the plugins. It's because of the theme. It's because of this or that. So today we're going to go through what I think are the 8 different reasons and concerns we need to have when we set up such a store. And probably we're going to split this into different episodes because it's so many topics and so many things we need to talk about. But we're going to try to give a general idea today. And so my question to you is, why do you think is a website speed important for WooCommerce websites as a general state?
Yeah, it's a big question. There's so many reasons. I mean, during initial calls with clients, I try and give them as many answers to this as possible relevant to their situation.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client who they were running this big sale. They were selling this product that they were no longer going to have the legal right to sell it anymore because it was in a partnership with another company. And they were sending out newsletter emails and running ads on Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. It was a visual thing for embroidery training stuff. And they call me because the site is crashing. It's 504, gateway timeout, bad gateways, et cetera. They're on the largest digital ocean droplet on Cloudways that had 92 gigabytes of RAM, and it's just
wow.
They kept throwing more and more resources at it, and it did not make a difference. There was still this bottleneck; things were crashing, and so it turned out their membership plugin was the big problem, which was a key part of the website. So we couldn't just turn it off. But the main reason is the biggest answer is performance means money and conversion rates and good user experience, right? Like this company is very old and it's a family owned company. It's beloved by the embroidery community.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were complaining on social media that they weren't able to check out or the lessons they had purchased, they could not log in and use. And so there's a lot of money talk when it comes to performance, but a lot of it, I think, also has to do with demonstrating your level of technical sophistication. And that engenders a lot of trust in your customers. If when you're able to, you know, you purchase something, you log in to use it, it works all of the time, not just on Sundays between certain windows or whatever, it works all the time.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the big ones. Then there's, of course, there's SEO reasons, right? Like Google also cares a lot about the user experience. And if you're not giving people a good one, unless you're the only website in the world that has that particular content or answers that question for the user, you're unlikely to be high up in the search rankings. So the conversion rates, profitability, return on investment for ad spend. You know, I've seen clients who are spending so much money on ads and the conversion rates are very, very low. And then if the website is taking 5 seconds to load, why would you pay for people to come stand in line? It doesn't make financial sense.
Correct. Yeah. So I would say, obviously, whenever you open a store, being it physically online, first impressions is the most important factor, I guess, because you're constantly wanting to have new clients coming in. So web performance is important for first impressions. It is important also for user satisfaction, right? So faster websites provide a smoother browsing experience. But it's also important to, just worry about those clients coming back and being engaged. And the conversion rates you referred about is also something that is very directly related to your website performance. SEO, it's not SEO, SEO-wise, it's also important, as you mentioned, because of the local ranking factor. It is more efficient when search engines are crawling your website. And there's one big topic, and that's the mobile optimization, right? So mobile sites, we also, in design, we say mobile first. In search engine optimization, we say mobile first as well. Google cares more about mobile experience than the desktop experience today. And so that's something that people usually forget about. I don't know about you, but the projects I've been working on, clients are still much worried about the desktop experience more than the mobile experience. And that's a very important factor. And it also, it's a challenge for people building websites because the smaller screen factor is not allowing people to add everything that they learned or read about in different articles or tutorials about what information should be on the product page. So it tells well, or it has the right elements for SEO. So basically, mobile experience is one of the most important factors. Would you agree, Mike?
Definitely. Yeah, more and more people, like I do most of my shopping on my phone, honestly. So and it makes all the difference. Like if it's not snappy when you're, you know, adding to cart, going to checkout, I'm easily distracted by my environment or something else. So I always tell clients, like, it's important to try and make it like an Amazon experience, right? I think they really nailed the checkout process where you spend your money before you've even finished thinking about what it is you're about to buy. So absolutely, like they're not just the speed, but also just how easy it is to tap, you know, the buttons, add things to cart, make adjustments. People get lost in the checkout experience, that's generally not good. I also wanted to mention that there's a good, like what you said before about the SEO stuff, like you're also asking for backlinks, right? Common SEO strategy. If your website loads fast and is beautiful and provides a good experience, people are going to be more willing to give you a backlink. And if you're paying for one, you know, that's, it just makes it an easier decision for them. And one other thing too was that when, you know, people buying stuff, people love to talk about their amazing experiences online and their terrible experiences online, right? It's just like with reviews on the internet, right? You either have these people who are super, super happy or the ones who are super angry. And the people are, it's like free advertising, I think. When people have a good WooCommerce shopping experience, they're more to, you know, oh, I got this thing today and, you know, it was super easy. It was three clicks and I was done and blah, blah, blah. So I think those are important factors as well to just to supplement what you...
Yeah, 100%. People have are more resistant writing good reviews when they are to write bad reviews. And if they do write a good review, it's because you've definitely did a good job, and that speaks for itself. I would just like to mention very quickly the key aspects of web performance. And I think they are, we can say they are loading time, how much time it takes for a web page to fully load, the rendering performance, right? Because we have different browsers and different computers and with different capabilities. And so the efficiency in which the browser processes and displays all the visual elements of a web page, that's very important. We have interactivity, right? The speed at which the website responds to user inputs is also something very important. We have resource management, like the images, the scripts, the style sheets, all of that is also important to manage. The network efficiency speaks more about CDNs and hostings and all the different, just networks where your hosting company is inserted and how fast it is worldwide. And also one last aspect that I think is one of the most important ones is where we developers do a little bit of our magic and help clients with is with the perceived performance, right? How fast the website appears to load. From a user's perspective. And I think that's one of the most important keys when we talk about web performance, right? Because there's so many things we can do to trick people into thinking that a website is fast whenever we cannot like just load everything in under half a second. So perceived performance is something that is I will say it is the magic that we introduced into the development phase of such websites, like lazy loading and preloading critical resources and all of that. That's, I guess, it's the most important part of web performance. What do you think, Mark?
Oh, I think it's hard to say the most important thing, right? Like everything needs to, you can do all of that, but if your time to first byte is 4 seconds, none of it's going to matter, right? So,
yes.
It's hard to pick one. I do try, when it comes to WooCommerce, I try to tell clients to not over-rely on caching, right? That tends to be one of the biggest, it's an important part of your performance strategy for sure. Caching should work correctly, especially if you are using a lot of marketing channels that are use those query string, you know, get parameters that can bypass caches on many hosting providers. But the backend performance, like the uncached time to first byte, when you add to cart, when you get to the checkout, I think is really important, because if everything else isn't done properly, at least if that is fast, then it's going to be pretty good for the visitor. And it also goes back to this technical sophistication, where if you load your entire store's pages on Cloudflare CDN, right, the edge cache it and caching on the hosting side as well, and you give people a super snappy experience as they're browsing, but as soon as they add something to the cart, you know, it takes 5 seconds, 10 seconds, or they're going to the cart, it takes longer. People don't like to be, well, they don't like inconsistent experiences. I think people expect when you add to cart or go to the checkout, that's going to be a bit longer. You know, there's address fields. Sometimes there's APIs being called to make that experience smoother. But it's you feel like you're getting duped somehow. Do you know what I mean? Where almost when you go out to a restaurant and they come and they're very responsive in the beginning, and then as the night goes on, you're like, they haven't, you know, checked on us in half an hour. What happened? There's something about that reliability and predictability I think humans like in the experience. And you don't want to punish users for buying something from you or having the intent to buy, right? You want to reward them as much as possible and make that a beautiful experience. So that was a long answer, but.
Well, I was thinking about perceived performance, because in an ideal world, we would load everything that we need before we present something to the user, right? So every single image that we need or scripts or whatever, we would sort of like thinking about installing a software on a computer, right? So you go through this setup and install everything or a game or whatever you want. And then when you load it up, it has all the resources immediately available to you. And that's not how the internet works. That's not how computers work. Maybe somewhere in the future, we will have so fast networks that you just send them like a zip file with all your website. And it, at the end of the day, it's just communicating through APIs about which products you want to buy and doing the payment. But we didn't reach that point yet in technology where we have all the websites loaded in the client's side. So we still need to lazy load some stuff, and we still need to be very intelligent about which scripts we're going to load first and which ones can be deferred to later. And so the perceived performance component of it is, I think, the most, at least in my view, the most important one. But everything else, like you said, is very determined and in terms of the weight that it will have and the impact that it will have. I wanted to bring up very quickly. So let's go through some of the components. And when we're building a WooCommerce store and we're going to think about performance, and being it for a newcomer to WooCommerce who wants to do an installation for the first time, or somebody who has a store, or even developers who are asked to just take care of the problem, a specific issue that they have with a client side. So I've divided this into a couple of topics, and I would suggest you, now that we go through a couple of them and just on top of our head and through our experience, let people know how important they are and what are the devices we can give to them. And I think the most important one, well, I'm already saying the most important one, but let's discuss this. Hosting is important, right? So the quality of the hosting and the I think it's the foundation of the website performance. And there are different hosting companies out there. There are some that are really specialized for commerce, and they offer services that are around the hosting part of it that are really specialized for WooCommerce. What do you think is the most, when coming to hosting and searching for a good hosting, what do you think are the most important pieces that a hosting provider can offer to a WooCommerce-based website?
Yeah, I think having adequate resources for the site is super important. So there's enough CPU and RAM that use fast SSD drives.
Mm-hmm.
There's room for growth. So a lot of the time I see not enough resources being allocated for the database, for example. So it's like having a big enough engine to power that database. Having access for developers like SSH, analytics tools, being able to access the logs and scrape those properly for little nuggets of information. Having some sort of application performance monitor, you know, APMs. New Relic is the one that I use the most. It's pretty popular because you want to be ideally alerted and proactive about performance issues rather than reactive. So you don't want to find out customers are emailing you or blasting you on social media that, you know, oh, you're trying to check out on this thing again and it's crashing or slow or whatever. It's better if you get an alert from your own systems that you have set up for monitoring, etc., to go out and put that fire and be able to pinpoint the issue very, very quickly instead of trying to play detective with discovering all the clues instead of having the clues sort of handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
So having some sort of CDN integration, I think, is quite important as well. Like there's a lot of Cloudflare enterprise partners now with hosting companies, which I think is, if you wanted to build your own Cloudflare network, good luck. That's a lot of resources, a lot of money. So it's I think it's easier to just get a host that already leverages their network for the DDoS protection and you know, the security, because sometimes the performance issues I see on WooCommerce sites are actually security related. Like the site is constantly getting attacked on the login page or good old XML RPC, which has been around since the dawn of computing and is used, but can still be the very common attack vector. And fraudulent orders was one that I saw come up recently. There was this client had a bot network that was attacking them, making a bunch of fraudulent orders, just taking up resources from real people who are actually buying stuff. So, yeah, those are the things I think off the top of my head.
And I obviously think that the very basic part of it, of the hosting, right? So if you have an audience or a market that is more US-based or more European-based or whatever region you're selling to or you're providing your services to, that also plays a very important role, deciding which area of the world you're selling to and then choose a hosting company that has good data centers or good resources on that specific area, region of the world is I guess number one thing that we should look for when we're going to choose a hosting company, because they all say they are very fast everywhere, but if you dig a little deeper, you will see that they are probably more US based so whenever you go to a hosting company and you search for their data centers and where they're located, some of them, even when you spin up a hosting service, they will ask which area do you want to cover. And I think some of them are more US-based, some of them are more European-based, we have Asian ones. And so, for example, if you want to go to the Asian market and sell in China, Japan, and other countries, it's far more challenging to choose a right hosting company than it would be to sell in Europe or in the US, right? And so that would be probably my advice, is to choose a hosting company that has all the services you talked about and all the little details that they care about. There are specific for WooCommerce, but also where they're really strong when it comes to providing the fastest services on the region of the world you want to sell. Number two, I would say, is the theme. And when we talk about the theme, what if you do your clients go more with existing themes and they change that, or do they have custom themes?
It depends on the size of the client. So I work with a range of, you know, small businesses to enterprise clients. And one of the Shark Tank clients I'm working with, they were using a very popular commercial theme that had a lot of extra bloat and unnecessary stuff they didn't need. And I told them, you know, you have the budget and the resources, go custom. It's hard to compete with the performance of a custom built theme. And if you have resources available to maintain it going forward, absolutely, it's the way to go. I generally find that smaller businesses, when they're just starting out, they don't know if what they're going to build and try is going to have legs, quote unquote, right? Like, is it going to work? Is it going to make money?
Mm-hmm.
So they will tend to pick a theme that is pretty, has predefined templates that will work with WooCommerce and has a bunch of features. And then as time goes on, you know, they probably also use a page builder or two or three.
Right.
I'm sure we've all seen and other components. And that will tend to, of course, slow things down. And I tell them during consultations that if you're using a certain combination of a theme and a page builder, I'm like, I would start with removing that. And then if you're still not happy, we can look further about what's slowing things down. So I'd say it's a mixture. Whenever I see a custom built theme with a car, I'm like, oh, good. This means that I don't have to have that difficult conversation of if they're really in love with their theme or the design, right, that the theme provides, and you tell them, hey, like, you have to get rid of this. It's like taking a toy away from a child that they're very, very happy with, right? And then I tell them, no, you can have the same design and features, just rebuild it with lighter components, right? So,
right. And usually as a developer, when you have a client that is using an existing theme and they start having these ideas about, oh, what if we could change this page and make the image appear on the right side instead of the left side, or we need the description to have a bigger place now, let's move it down, or now we need an extra tab for this or for that. And then you suddenly end up having so much customization on top of an existing theme that you start asking yourself or challenging the client, this is becoming so cumbersome to maintain all of these changes. It would make more sense to build a custom theme. So I would say, if you have the resources and if your client has the resources, a custom theme may seem a very hard work at the beginning, because you have to do all of those standard pages, the 404s, the search page, and all of that. But it's kind of like it will compensate it at the end of the game, because if you have full control over everything that is being loaded on a theme, and you usually, when you go with an existing theme, you don't need all of the features that they offer, you have a lot more control over performance. And so if you're starting out, fine. But if you want to invest in something that is very important to the performance, I would say theme is the number one category where you would put some resources, because we're talking about web performance, right? And we're talking about key metrics that we can measure. And the theme part is one of the most important components, because it is responsible for the front end part. And so when we talk about key metrics, we talk about LCP, largest content painful. We talk about the first input delay. We talk about cumulative layout shift, which is when the page loads and things start moving up and down because the image are loading or different pages or parts of the page are loading and they're shifting up and down, which makes it very confusing for a user to follow. That is all the theme or most of part of the theme responsibility. What do you think are, from the key metrics, what is the most important one in your view?
I think largest contentful paint is a big one because it's so related to conversion rates, time to first byte as well. Important. I know it's not a core web vital.
Yeah, I forgot to mention. It's an important key metric as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else, like the largest contentful paint, can only be as fast as, you know, the time to first byte. So, and there's also interaction to next paint, which you mentioned in the introduction, right? The, like, that I think replaced FID. I don't remember when.
You're right. Correct. Yeah.
The transition. Because when you click the button or whatever and something, you don't see something happening within a few milliseconds, we get confused or frustrated, right? We keep clicking the button faster. That's a common human thing where we think clicking the button harder and more intensely, you know, maybe you press your mouse button extra hard
or multiple times. Yeah.
Like in the elevator, right? Like people are running faster and faster.
It's not coming. Let's press again. Yeah.
I think that one is really important for stores because of the add to cart checkout flow. It's important to signal to the user that they're making progress towards their end goal and with their journey of trying to get this product or service that you're selling. That one is more difficult to measure not in the wild, but to pinpoint where the INP issue is coming from is not as difficult as like largest contentful paint, for example, which is well established for being very related to the revenue conversion rates. There's a cool calculator that Google put out a long time ago that they deprecated for some reason. I don't know why, but we took the code and put it on my website. I think I've sent you the link before to this LCP revenue calculator.
And I would recommend everybody to take a look at that because it's very interesting how much you can estimate that it will increase in terms of conversions just by tweaking some of these key metrics in web performance.
Yeah, it can help a lot put things into perspective for the clients. It's not based on a specific niche. It's aggregated data that people in Google Analytics opted in to allow Google to track. So it's from all niches across all different industries. And it gives us the best idea of if we can improve the LCP from X to Y, what, and if you know your average order value, the amount of customers come per month, and one other piece I can't remember, you can see how much more revenue you will get if you make that improvement in the LCP, and it can help shortcut some of the conversations about price, right? If you're saying, oh, it's going to cost $10,000 or $20,000 to do this, you know, reworking the site or whatever, and they can see, oh, that sounds expensive. But if you in the calculator, they can see, oh, that's going to mean $500,000 extra in potential profit. It's from a business perspective, it becomes a much easier decision, right? So
Avalara wants to make sure that your projects go smooth. And part of that includes doing it right with their API. Their resources cover it all to help your clients manage sales and use, excise, GST, VAT, and other tax types across the US and abroad. You'll find it all on their site, and you'll be learning more on how they can help you during their sponsorship of WooDevChat. Want to learn more? Just go to developer.avalara.com.
And clients do have sort of like the first impression that they get when we present them these numbers and we talk about this specific calculator you're talking about, and they go, that sounds too much, or that sounds too good to be true, and all of that. But you've done that. You actually have some cases on your website where you improved some clients' websites and it really turned into more profit. So that's something that clients will notice after you do a performance tweak. And it's something that is absolutely incredible how they suddenly start believing in you and suddenly start seeing how important web performance is to their funnel and to the sales and conversions and all of that. And it's sort of like makes you feel a little bit like a magician or a special god of some sorts when you get to that point, right? And then that client is hooked to you forever, I would say.
Yeah, it's the very effective way to establish trust for the long term, because a lot of the stuff when it comes to performance is unknown for a client, right? Like, we all know technology is unreliable, unpredictable, and we can have the best intentions, we can make all these plans, and then something that we didn't anticipate for can mess things up. And so I think even if you have these case studies and you have lots of proof and stories, clients are still a little bit like, but maybe that won't work for me. Or, yeah. So when it does, you know, I can see the struggle in their faces and their hesitation. They're like, they taking that leap, you know, jumping off the cliff and spending the money where things could not get any better, right? That's one of their main concerns, and that it's not going to provide the return on investment. Fortunately, when you follow specific methodology, and I'm sure this is true for anyone who's worked with performance, if the client is getting enough traffic, if their, you know, the user experience of the site is otherwise good, their business model is sound, when you're improving the performance, it always makes sense, you know, within reason, of course. Once you get to a certain point, unless you're Amazon or Walmart or a very large client, spending an extra $500,000 to improve performance is not necessarily going to make sense. But for smaller clients, the initial performance tuning is pretty much always worth it for clients. So yeah.
I guess being aware that it is an important factor when you go online and do sell products is step one to admit, regardless of your size. And I've seen other big brands in Portugal and companies who are selling online who initially didn't give that much of a thought about performance, and their websites were being slow and inconsistent, and they were difficult to navigate. And yeah, since some time back, a couple of them have been actually working on their performance side and worrying about all these different key metrics we just talked about. And guess what? They're selling better. And it's very, you usually think big companies and big brands, they must for sure know about this. And you probably also think, my client has been online selling this product for more than 10 years now. He heard about performance. He'd done everything that he can. Surprisingly, many people do not know about it in a way that affects immediately their conversion rate. I wanted to talk also about plugins and the importance of plugins, and especially the number of plugins that people install. They think they're essential, and they're not. So my experience is more in terms of whenever I get it hands on a website, it is performing very slowly. 30, 40 plus plugins are installed. When we start doing the audit, and do you need this plugin? What is this for? We suddenly get rid of 10 immediately just by talking 2 minutes into the list of the plugins. And just that alone already cuts down the time to considerably. And all the other plugins that are installed, they are usually because there's something missing on the WooCommerce out-of-the-box features that people don't have. And we also see WooCommerce iterating and adding some of those missing features into the core installation. But number of plugins is also another thing that is very important to talk about. And that means also you need to update them. And the more you have, the more security issues you have. You certainly also have multiple plugins that do the same function, or at least in their feature list, they offer the same things. And you just add things to the website that aren't absolutely not necessary. And so when it comes to choosing a plugin, it's also important to know about their performance and how they affect performance, and if they are built in a way that are the concern of the author of the plugin, if it was performance or not. And we use usually plugins to do image optimizations, maybe to do caching as well. We're going to talk about caching next. We do plugins basically to change features and to add features to WooCommerce. So plugins are very important. What is your experience with plugins? And you mentioned page builders. Page builders are plugins, but there are other nightmares that we can talk about when it comes to plugins and performance, right?
Yeah, I mean, my approach is similar to yours. You know, like, it's remarkable how frequently you ask just simple questions like, why do you have 3 forms plugins, or what is this for? And they say like, oh, well, we haven't used that in 6 months or a year. We don't use that plugin or feature anymore. And I tell them, like what you said, you know, every plugin is a security liability and a performance liability. So if you don't need it, you know, treat your website like an F1 car. It's nothing on an F1 car that doesn't need to be there, that has a specific purpose, provides some value in some way, is not on the car, period. There's no reason to have it. So otherwise, I would say the plugin quality is much more than the plugin quantity. So I have seen plugin websites that have, you know, 90 plugins and perform very, very well. You know, it's absolutely possible. But it's usually these heavier plugins that have lots of bundle features, 80% of which you don't use. And then you do that 10 times and, you know, you can see them in the code profiling tools. Plugins that are just finding out, do I need to run or are running unnecessarily on pages, like that client I mentioned earlier. The Bing bot. So Bing, well, usually we think of Google bot, but Bing bot was crawling a product archive page, and it was triggering the membership plugin to see if the Bing bot had access to the particular pages or products on that product category page, because the way the plugin was configured was grant access based on categories. And I was like, it's ridiculous, right? First of all, a bot isn't going to log in and take any courses or download any products, but there was literally no reason for the membership plugin to execute, right? So that comes down to code quality in my experience, and making sure that, you know, plugins, pretty much most plugins I see, do not have the logic to find out, do I need to execute here? Do I need to do anything here before it starts to process its own code? And I think that's why when people complain about WooCommerce being slow or WordPress being slow, it's not the core of WordPress being slow. It's all the other extra stuff that you added, usually, that is causing those kind of experiences.
And when it comes to choosing a particular plugin that has a particular feature, you obviously have a bunch of different plugins out there. And usually what I tell people is, well, you could hire a developer to make a more informative decision about how the code quality is and how the plugin works and how it performs. But if you don't have the resource to hire an expert when you buy these plugins, basically, I guess, looking at the plugins reviews and seeing what other people are telling, or maybe, yeah, just try to get a feel of if you see a plugin that is promoting bundle features that are 30, 40, 50, and they're expanding way beyond whatever the core function of the plugin is, it usually means that they are bloated and they're bloated and they're not like very specific oriented to the feature that they were talking about. When we did plugins for other companies here at our agency, some of them wanted to expand to other areas that were not the core focus of their plugin initially. And so for a developer, it's very hard to keep consistency and keep the code in a shape that is solely focused on the core feature that it was intended to be in the first place. And so if you start doing other features and you start doing other elements, adding other elements to the plugin, it for the developer or developer team who is responsible for making it the most performant ever, it's going to be very hard for him to just focus on that particular feature. So that is very important. Next on the list is caching. We talked about caching. There are three main techniques of caching, I think it's we can say. There is page caching, which are static versions of pages that are stored usually on the hosting side. We have object caching, which caches database queries so that they can be not executed every time somebody gets into a page. And we also have the browser caching, which is telling the browser to store certain resources locally and not having them just transmitted all over again. Caching is probably one of the big hardest things to manage and to talk about, because most of the hosting companies already say we have the best caching solution and technique, and just come with your website and host with us, and you're going to have the latest caching technology. And then when you dive in and then you want to control some aspect of the caching, you usually have no idea what they're doing behind the scenes, and they don't tell you what resources and what techniques they're using behind the scenes. And so this is a very important topic. It's a very difficult topic as well for a developer perspective, because usually people think, oh, we just throw in a bunch of plugins like WP Rocket or WP Total Cache or whatever other plugins there are, and the web switch will be faster, right? And it's not. And then you hire a developer, and the developer goes in and starts thinking about what is going on. We have all this caching going on. And what do you think about caching? Is it up in your list as an important part? And also, it's important to talk about the different pages that we have within WooCommerce, right? We have the checkout, the cart, we have a catalog, we have first page. So not all of these pages are treated equally when it comes to caching, right?
There's also two other little pieces of caching too. There's fragment caching, which is rarely used. It's going to be handy to cache partial pieces of the page. And CDN caching, edge caching, I would argue that's, yeah, that's, but I know that those are typically not considered in the umbrella the same way. It's not the ones that pop up first to mind. And I think with object caching too, you can also cache the results of API calls, right? I think we've done that before for clients with really slow, like they need to fetch something from, yeah, some API that takes a couple of minutes. And instead of doing that, every page load, we store it in a transient. But yes, caching is very, very important. I think in terms of the order that we've discussed things, right? The hosting, the theme, plugins, caching, they're all really, really the first points of call when it comes to doing audits and making sure things are running well. I think page caching is probably the most important one to get right, because everything else will sort of, like I said, the LCP will depend on your time to first byte, which is reduced tremendously once you get page caching working. And if you can leverage edge caching on top of that, you can save usually another 100, 200, 300 milliseconds, which can speed up the other components.
Especially the initial page, right? The home page is probably one of the most easiest pages to cache. And because it is the point of entry to the website, it just gives you the first impression that we're looking for it to be fast and clicky, right? And all of the links that go from the first page for specific products and maybe category pages and all of that, those are very easily cacheable pages, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the pieces where there aren't dynamic components that need to do post requests or fetch something from the database particular to that visitor, that kind of stuff. I certainly encourage people to build their home pages like that so that they're very cache friendly and we don't have to worry about users seeing something they're not supposed to or those kind of things. compared to, you know, if you have product category pages where you have something with facets where you can filter and drill down, there you're fetching a lot of information straight from the database, which I know.
Even with those pages, you can still cache them, right? So usually filtering options that you have on the website, and in the cases where the number of combinations are not in the millions, if they're in the hundreds, it's not difficult to cache all the different variations when it comes to filtering, right? And having fast filtering is one of the biggest challenges in the WooCommerce store. But if you're small and if you have the knowledge and if you can hire a developer to do that, we developers have the resources to cache those filtered pages as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you've even built something for, I forgot the name of it, right? But you built a filtering plugin for a client that is actually selling it.
Well, in that particular version, we did a little, the client had this awesome idea to just provide the browser with the initial results of the caching of the filtered product. But it wasn't directly related to the caching part, but here's the deal. It benefits greatly from from page caching, because the information that comes with the page source is already enough for people to feel the filtering to be very fast, is the perceived part that we talked about at the beginning. But it's not caching everything, but it's caching just enough for people to think this is super fast. And yes, that was one of the techniques that they used. But even if you don't have that, even if you have like a page caching system where the first customer who goes in is the one who generates the HTML for that particular cache, and then the second one that does the same sort of the same filtering options will be served the cached version of it, right? And that's possible.
Yeah, and with filtering too, you get you can do both page caching and basically object caching is what I would call it when you are storing them in the database. So if you can cache the query string, get parameters right from if that's how the facet plugin is working, then you get to leverage, you know, Varnish or Nginx or whatever other caching plugin you might be using. And that's one cool way to do it. But then if that isn't cached, that it fetches it straight from a transient inside the database is the next best thing. So I know some people don't like having layers of cache because you can have stale cache and you don't want the user to be delivered expired data. But I think if you get things configured correctly, it just, everything helps boost one another, right? It's the same thing with page caching locally on the host and page caching on the edge with Cloudflare or a similar solution. It's always better to, if Cloudflare wants to cache your homepage, that when you deliver the page to Cloudflare, if you can give a cached version, that's way faster than taking 2 to 3 seconds for time the first byte to then deliver to Cloudflare. So I think it's important to consider these component, like these aspects in the performance strategy and get things, you know, there might be some little fine tuning or issues to iron out as you're rolling out a caching strategy. And a lot of planning is usually a good idea with clients, asking them, what's the typical user journey? You know, what different types of users and avatars do we have on the site? How do they navigate through the site so that we can make sure we're considering all types of users? Also for employees, you know, customers are the ones giving money to the WooCommerce store, but the people who need to work in the back end processing orders, support tickets, that kind of stuff. I think it's important that they have a good experience as well. Mm-hmm. And you won't be able to use page caching as much for them, but there's certain object caching and similar techniques you can use for their tasks daily that can make it a better experience. They get more productive, store owners are happier and all of that stuff. So
and then you have the cart pages and the checkout pages, which obviously cannot be page cached. Maybe parts of it can be object cache because they have elements in there that are repetitive for all customers. But then it goes back to what we were saying before about hosting, right? Then for those pages, you need to rely on the quality of the CPU, memory, SSD, and all of that to render those pages fast enough, because it's not just enough to do a fast homepage and category pages and product pages. If people get to the cart and then to the checkout and the page takes 10 seconds to load, you just basically lost the client right there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something to really get nailed down. Like, I think it's okay for the final checkout, you know, where people press after they've been added their billing details, you know, a credit card number, all of that, pressing that final button, you know, it needs to communicate with the payment gateway, API calls back and forth. I think people accept and understand that that can take a bit of time, but
because it's like that everywhere in every single site, right?
Yeah. But getting to that stage shouldn't take long. especially with, you know, mobile browsers nowadays, you can autofill pretty much all of the fields, right? And WooCommerce is so popular and widespread that unless you've done a lot of customization to the fields or whatever, like, you know, the Google Chrome, Safari, whatever, I think we'll be able to figure it out. Yeah, we can't cache those pages, but it's still so... Maybe you might be able to do some fragment caching. Like if you still have the menu in there and it's a mega menu, super complicated, right? Like we could cache that, so that's not taking up unnecessary time. I don't think that many users are going into the menu.
At that point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you might have a footer, right? Like I've seen this before. We have a footer widget or some piece that is, you know, contacting Instagram or doing something else, you know, blocking the right page, and the user isn't even going to see it, but it still is preventing the checkout flow from progressing quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to take the last minutes that we have on for this episode just to sum up quickly. So we have chosen our hosting company, we have chosen our theme, and we have set of plugins that we chose. We learned about caching and what the different caching versions are. And now we've installed everything and we run the website and it's slow. All right. The website is not moving at all. Then we need to talk about, and we've already talked about Core Web Vitals. So we have different diagnosing tools that we can use to understand why the site is slow, all right? Because if we followed all of the advices that were given, we've chosen the right hosting, the theme is not big, the plugins number is reduced, and we only have the ones that we really need. We've tweaked, we spent hours tweaking the caching, and the site is still taking 2 seconds to load the homepage, for example. Core Web Vitals are the first thing to go to and to measure, right? How do you do that? How do you measure Core Web Vitals?
Yeah, there's definitely using a front end tool like that, Google PageSpeed Insights, GT Metrics, Web Page Test, right? We've seen those at the Perf Now conference,
yes.
They all run some piece of Lighthouse nowadays, right? You used to have to use Google PageSpeed Insights. It's called, I think, something else now anyway. web.dev/measure. And so they all just have different ways of running Lighthouse and then presenting the data to you differently. So I like Web Page Test the most. It's the geekiest, so it could be quite overwhelming for people. I think GT Metrics does a really good job of presenting the data in a more digestible way that isn't overwhelming. And it gives you a good amount of insights. And Google PageSpeed, I think, because it's the official Google tool, people like to use that, and it feels like it's more credible, trustworthy.
And it will tell you also about SEO, right? Because you want to appear on Google results and at the top eventually, and that particular tool will give you more information about that specific part of the performance, right?
It tells you if you're failing the Core Web Vitals, right, for that particular page or for your entire website, depending on how much traffic you're getting. I believe Web Page Test does that as well. It has the Crux Google Chrome user experience metrics, but that's only Chrome data, which is important to remember. It's the same thing on PageSpeed Insights, that it's not collecting that information from other non-Google Chrome browsers. But yeah, like the, those tools, I mean, we can do a whole workshop on those. There's a bunch of course on them because they're so advanced and rich in what they can do. But yeah, that's where, you know, a lot of people, they come to me and they say, hey, like I ran this and it's slow. I don't understand this report. They try. Sometimes those reports are oversimplified where it's there's a lot of pieces that they miss or that they say, oh, like, you know, the LCP element is this. And it's like, well, why is it taking 8 seconds, right? Usually it's JavaScript related or something else, but it could also be the time to first byte was 6 seconds. So that takes someone who has experience and, you know, to decrypt, I think, or understand things more. Do you have a favorite tool of the...
Well, no, it's basically just the ones that you talked about. But what I think is the most important one, I don't know. I don't want to say there's a most important one, but I do feel like that the Google's tool is a good starting point for people to understand a little bit what's going on, because they also give, I don't want to say simple instructions on how to fix those, because they are probably not simple. When they say to reduce image sizes, or when they say to lazy load some scripts and all of that stuff, usually as a store owner, you don't really know what to do. And even as a developer, you suddenly think, oh, so if I just lazy load all of this stuff and I just delay all of the loading of the JavaScript that is not necessary, that will fix it. But then I start thinking, oh, how do I determine which ones are not necessary? And how do I determine which ones the clients need? If they change something on a homepage, suddenly it's the script that does this funny animation or has this slider going on. So it's very hard for people to understand. And I think Google's tool is the one that gives you a starting point to start figuring out what's going on. They do this coloring with red, yellow, and I think that's all the colors, the important colors they use to pinpoint all the most important parts of it. And if you manage to figure out some of those points, you're already in a good starting point. And then you can use all the other tools you mentioned to just fine tune specific parts of it, right? But once you have the results, and once you have some indications on the website, specifically what's going on, being it a section of the website, a image problem, a JavaScript problem, whatever it is, then it basically comes back to the theme setup, right? And how to properly set up the theme. Usually, if you go to with an existing theme, there are options that you can turn on and off. And by those on and off, you will then obviously maybe not load some of the scripts if the theme is done properly, if they have taken care of just not loading scripts they don't need for that particular page. This is where page builders come in very handy. And that's why I'm a huge, huge fan of Gutenberg and all the Gutenberg experience, because it's very performance focused. But then again, you will optimize the heavy scripts, the styles. You will disable some theme features, as we talked about. Mobile performance is also something that you will fine tune. And then you suddenly, let's move on to the story and with this, then suddenly you realize, okay, I've fixed all of these problems. I have a faster website. I have fixed most of the problems that were told to me to fix. How do you keep record of the website's performance, and how do you go about making sure that this first initial tweak that you did is going to keep up with your website, and you're going to maintain all of that performance throughout the whole existence of the website? What is your tip, sort of like as a final tip, on how developers or clients can diagnose the performance throughout the whole website, throughout the whole time that it exists?
Yeah, I'll make it short. I think it's important to focus on both lab tests, which are these synthetic tests you run through GTmetrix and other tools, and then also look at the real user metrics, which is what actual people are experiencing, and then diagnose as much as you can using those tools, and having some kind of performance budget in mind in terms of what kind of space do we have for, like, what are we going to allow for the LCP to be? What are we going to allow for the time to first byte to be? How much JavaScript, you know, what's the overall payload for the entire front page that we're going to allow to be, you know, not larger than 500 kilobytes, for example, would be great. Sometimes it can be way larger. And sort of tracking with, you know, a spreadsheet or screenshots or whatever you can, and sort of dating those to make sure that things are staying within your thresholds that you've defined, I think is a good starting point. If you, unless you have a whole performance team dedicated, you know, what we've seen at the conference, right? These big companies like IKEA and, you know, they have dedicated performance teams that their job is to make sure everything is running smoothly and they interface with other departments. I don't think that's realistic for a lot of companies, but we can still take some of the ideas and sort of track things. I think the most important thing is don't just assume that once you've made a change performance-wise or whatever, that it's going to persist indefinitely forever, because the website is usually a living, breathing thing. You know, you do updates to the plugins, etc. People tend to add more features, and sometimes a plugin update can introduce a new performance bottleneck, and it's important to patch that.
Or changing the homepage, right? Or you have a different hero section, you have a different something different in your homepage, and you suddenly think it looks way better, I'm going to sell a lot more, and then it certainly affects one of the key metrics, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like if someone has hired a designer to to implement something, and you're like, oh, this is beautiful, but it's, you know, the page size has increased to 5 megabytes, and all your metrics are way, way off now. Like, aesthetically, it might be better, but you're going to end up losing money that way, in my experience. So I think, yeah, having it into your sort of workflow, whatever size company you are, to do some kind of testing to make sure that the performance is still good after you've made major changes or even minor ones, I think it's important, because it feel the, you know, when you business owners will always check the money side of things, right? And when they notice all of a sudden that conversion rates are down or have been trending downwards over a few months, and, you know, they feel it in their wallet, that's a very frustrating position to be in, and it's nicer to catch that.
And they usually probably think, oh, it's something with my marketing or advertisement, or there's something with the products or reviews, and they usually don't think it might be the performance part of the website that is damaging your sales.
Yeah, exactly.
So regularly monitoring the site performance is our advice. As a last advice or piece of advice for today's episode, New Relic, it doesn't store information that much, but it is a tool that you can use to just analyze regularly your website's performance. Google PageSpeed Insights is something that some of the hosting providers have embedded in their system, and some of them can also give you some notifications if you reach certain values that are not recommended. And I think GT Metrics, I'm not sure, it's the one that you can also buy a subscription and have it regularly measure and analyze your website and send you insights to your inbox for you to be able to,
GT Metrics actually even lets you, if you pay them a subscription, you can have it alert you if certain metrics have exceeded, right? If you say, I don't want LCP larger than 2.5 for your product category page or whatever, like, it will actually send you an email, an alert, and that goes back to the proactivity aspect, right? Where it's better to find that out and do something about it immediately rather than have found out 3 months later and revenue is down and morale is.
And it also provides actionable recommendations as well. GT Metrics is another one that does that. All right. So we talked about a bunch of stuff today. CDN, database optimization, image optimization, lazy loading, plugins, themes, performance, key metrics. All of that could be potentially a bunch of other episodes that we will talk about. And actually, it would be cool to bring somebody else as a guest to talk specifically about some of these key aspects. As a last recommendation, I think we can also say and talk about the Perf Now conference that happens in November in Amsterdam. You've been going to the conference before, and you've recommended that conference to me last year, and I went there last year with you. And although within WordPress and WooCommerce, we're only used to go to the WordCamps and the different versions of those, Perf Now has, I haven't seen the word WordPress ever in their website, but it has so much to do with our work, and it has so much to do with the development work we do for WordPress. And so I definitely recommend people checking out Perf Now. It happens in Amsterdam in November. It's a conference that is not as big as any WordCamp Europe or US or Asia that we've seen. And you get out of there with the will to just go back to your clients and say, hey, I'm going to make your website a lot faster now because I understand performance better. Would you recommend Perf Now as well?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's, you know, the people who build the tools that we use, and they're pioneers of front-end performance and are sharing these incredible stories. You know, a lot of them work for big companies, and they give you real case studies where we're talking millions of dollars at stake from making certain changes. And it always reinvigorates me every time I go, where I'm like, oh, I need to build this now, and we're going to introduce this to clients and make everything better for them. It's, if you're a real performance enthusiast and love this stuff, it's, I haven't found a conference that's more exhilarating than Perf Now. And the people are super friendly. The vibe is really, really cool there, right? When we were there last year.
And just being able to talk to the people who built all of these tools, like, they have actually something to say about what's coming next, and advices and the evolution of all of this. So it seems also like you go to that conference and you're in the future for the next 1 year or 2 years, and you know what's going to happen and what's important. And the fact that you as a developer can offer that to the client and make money out of it and sort of like turn yourself into their magician and do stuff that nobody else can do, that is super important.
Yeah. Yeah, it sets you apart for sure.
All right, this is it for our episode. Thank you so much for listening in, and I hope to meet you guys in the next one.
Hey, Bob WP here, and I'd like to thank Avalara.com for their support. Please consider checking them out. And again, thanks for tuning into Woo Dev Chat. And if you're not subscribed, just visit dothewoo.io/subscribe, or find us on your favorite pod player. And remember, you can subscribe to any of our shows directly or hear them all on our full Do the Woo channel feed. And lastly, we welcome your thoughts, insights, and feedback on all of our episodes. Just head over to dothewoo.io and leave a comment. So until the next time,